You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
This portion of the John C. Scott Talk Show originates from the Perfection Auto Works Studios. Well, soon we will once again honor the dead and remember them. And the day, September 11th, 2001, when the attack against America killed 2,996 people. Each of us can recall that day, the time, the visuals of the Twin Towers of the Trade Center in New York hit by the hijacked airliners. We must never forget. 5 years after September 11th, 2001, I recorded a conversation with Tucson developer Jim Campbell. He was on the upper floors of the Tower 2 when one of the planes struck Tower 1. He could have stayed to watch what happened next. He would have died. Jim Campbell tells his story of his escape from Tower 2 and life rather than death of so many. No story I've ever heard of that tragic day tells more than Jim Campbell's story, which you will hear next on the John C. Scott Show, just 4 days from the 18th anniversary of the most deadly attack on America in our history. And now here's the interview with Tucson and Jim Campbell that tells his story of survival and life after the death of so many. September the 11th attacks. This is the anniversary. A series of coordinated suicide attacks by Al-Qaeda upon the United States of America, September the 11th, 2001. On that morning, terrorists affiliated with Al-Qaeda hijacked four commercial passenger jetliners. The hijackers intentionally crashed two of the airliners into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York, killing everyone on board and many others working in the buildings. The death toll climbed over 3,000. The hijackers crashed a third airliner into the Pentagon. Fourth plane crashed into a field in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, after passengers and members of the flight crew on the fourth aircraft attempted to retake control of their plane, which was headed for Washington, D.C. There are no known survivors of any of the flights. Let's recall 9/11/2001. Jim Campbell of Oasis Construction and Development Company is in Tucson, but he was not here on 9/11/2001. Jim, welcome to our show this morning. Start with that morning of 9/11/2001 as the sun came up, and then follow it throughout the day, if you will.
Sure, John. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Actually, I'll start for the night before. On September 10th, I was living in San Francisco running a high-tech software company. Had boarded a plane to fly to New York City. I had a 8 o'clock meeting with Morgan Stanley, their SVP of marketing, who was based on the 64th floor of Tower 2. So got in the night before, had a restless night's sleep, which I normally do when I go from west to east, and woke up at 6:30. Was staying at the Embassy Suite across the street from the World Trade Center. Went across the street to the mall. The World Trade Center buildings, the North and South Towers, were on top of a mall, and so went into to the mall, had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Checked in. They had a pretty elaborate check-in procedure. They actually gave you an ID card. They took a picture in order for you to go into the building. And so I kind of watched people while I was waiting for my car. There was a group of workers there, construction workers. There were seven of them in their overalls, and they were going up to the 110th floor of Tower 1 that were checking in before me. Needless to say, they never made it out. I was talking to them as they were going up. I checked in, made my way to the 64th floor of Tower 2. We were meeting in a northeast corner conference room. Was escorted there and was there alone for about five minutes, looking north at the Chrysler Building, the Empire State Building, the Brooklyn Bridge. It's just an amazing view. Just, and considering that I was on the 64th floor of a 110th floor building, I could only imagine what the 110th floor looked like. The SVP of marketing for Morgan Stanley came in, and we began to meet. And roughly at 8:50, the meeting changed. Heard three distinct sounds. The first sound sounded like a jet engine, a turbine, wound out as high as it could go. It just kind of a whirling noise. And then the next second, we heard a crash. And then the second after that, you heard an explosion. So there was three distinct sounds. Got up, looked out the window, and we could see the west side of Tower 1. And there were about 15 windows broken with flickers of flame, and that was it. It didn't look that bad on that side of the tower. Little did we know what was happening on the north side. But the sky was also filled with 8.5 by 11 papers. It looked like a parade, just papers everywhere. Morgan Stanley had been through the attack on the World Trade Center in 93, and they had been trained that if anything happened in any tower to get out. And so as I was sitting there watching, the woman that I was meeting with was already running around the floor instructing everybody to go down and get out. And so I had a choice to make at that time, whether to watch, which I had a great seat for what was going on. But I chose to follow her, and we ended up going down the stairs. And some people have asked, you know, why didn't you take the elevator instead of the stairs? And it's just like a fire drill. So people are going down the stairs. People are laughing. They're joking. We got down to about the 30th floor, and that's when our building was hit. The building was punched one direction, and then it rocked back and forth for about 5 or 7 seconds. People fell down. The laughing and joking quickly stopped. At that point, I figured everything was okay. I had been in the earthquake in San Francisco in 89, and, you know, when the building quits rocking, you're fine. So we began to go down a lot faster now, and got down to the plaza level. The plaza was, in essence, the roof of the mall, and the Port Authority people were guiding us down stairs and into the mall. And as we were at the plaza level, you could look out on the roof, and the roof was covered with debris, airplane debris. There was a large pile of, it looked like parts of a person. It was pretty traumatic at that point. People were definitely freaked. And you could smell gas. You could smell diesel, or I guess it was jet fuel, but you could smell it in the air. Got down to the mall level, and now the Port Authority people were just basically made a row instructing us to go out. Got outside the building, and now we were standing between a church and City Hall, looking straight up, people everywhere. The woman in front of me mentioned she was on the 44th floor of Tower 1, and she had watched the American Airlines jet fly in above her and hit her building. And that's the first that I had heard that there was an airplane. Sat there for about 10 minutes watching, and people began to jump. I watched the first person and decided at that point that I didn't want that in my head. So I turned around and started walking around City Hall. So everybody was looking at the towers, and I was walking kind of against their view, and I could tell from their faces whenever somebody would jump, which would happen about once every 90 seconds. Kept walking, did not turn around. Walked around City Hall, went into a store to get a Coke. Had just hiked down 64 floors, so I needed something to drink. And I put my cup in to get ice, and the whole building shook. And it wasn't like an earthquake. An earthquake rolls. This is a chaotic shaking, and the whole building shook, and that's when Tower 2 fell. Got out of the building, stood on the street corner again. Now, we were on the north side of the tower. The The wind that day was going north to south, so we were about 3 to 4 blocks to the north, so we didn't get inundated with the dust that you've seen on the pictures. Continued to walk around. I was trying to make my way back to my hotel because I had my computer there that had 3 years worth of emails, or not 3 years, I'm sorry, 15 years worth of emails. Most of my friends, people that I had kept in touch with, were all on that computer. Went over to West End, which was the road that ran along the west side of the towers, and that was the staging for the firefighters. And you'd see a fire truck roll up, and the people would get out and they'd hop in line. And these were kids. I mean, they seemed like kids to me. They were probably in their early 20s. And then you'd also see old men like me. You'd see people in their 40s and the whole range. And they just hopped in line, and they were all just walking towards Tower 1, which was still standing. And it was just an amazing sight to see it. Firefighters are just amazing people. Anyway, made it back to a hotel that night. Kind of saw the first pictures the next morning. It took me 5 days to get home. We were trapped in New York City for a couple days, and then 3 days to drive home. On the drive home, I'd wake up every morning and cry for about an hour and a half, just uncontrollable, just didn't know why or who or what. It was just there. And stopped at Notre Dame, sat in the cathedral for about 3 hours and wrote down portions of what I experienced. Stopped at Wounded Knee, which was the massacre of Wounded Knee with the Indians, and they have a old religion called the Ghost Dance that in essence is a religion based on dreaming of the way things used to be. And so I sat there with a couple Indians at 8:30 in the morning and had a beer with them and talked about that.
Well,
and then made it home.
Excluding the 19 hijackers, 2,974 people died in the attack, another 24 missing, presumed dead. Overwhelming majority of the casualties, civilians, certainly including nationals of 90 different countries. In addition, the death of at least one person from lung disease ruled to be a part of the casualty list. You think of the 3,000 dead, you're alive. By the grace of God, I would assume, Jim, because you could have stayed and looked and said, well, there's a plane in the building next to me. I'll watch and see what happens now. Or you could have left behind the woman and gone down. You chose the latter and saved your life. I'm sure somewhere along the way you think of yourself as an individual of why I survived, why 3,000 others died, somewhere along the way. When you first found out it was an attack, not an accident, I mean, did you think that night as you went back to the hotel, or was the newspapers telling you, and the reporters' television and everybody else, this was an attack on America by terrorists? When did you first learn that?
Actually, on the way back, I stopped in the village and stopped at Barney Max, which was a bar there. They had two phones, which was the first way I could contact my wife and contact other people in my company. And so that's where I learned that they had two TVs on. And people were angry. The New Yorkers that were there were just downright angry. They just could not believe that this would happen. So that was the first I became aware of it.
Well, you had to be angry too, and sad, and I mean, I can't even imagine what you were thinking. And then the long road home gave you an opportunity over many, many miles to think about it and to replay it in your mind over and over again, because the television sets, no matter where you arrived on stops along the way, were playing it over and over again, and they still do. And I'm curious, it's something I'm sure you'll never get over with, but has it changed over the years after 7 years on these anniversaries when the world thinks about it?
Do you think about it every day, or do you think about it every week, or do you think about it every month or on an anniversary? Well, how often does it come back to you?
It's a big part of me. I carry it with me. Every year I've done something different. On the 50-year anniversary, I teamed up with Roger Tampanetti, from the Tucson Firefighters Unions, and we put the lights up on A Mountain. I've gone on long Jeep trips. I've written stories. I created a CD. This is the first time I've ever talked to people on the radio or anything else about it. So this is a different year as well. It's a big part. It made me conservative, kind of in a self-centered way. On the drive back, my sister is a Buddhist, and she told me that the Buddhist view was I had lived such a good life, they wanted me to continue. This is as I was trying to justify why I was still here. And my brother is a deacon in the Catholic Church, and he mentioned I had lived such a wretched life that they were going to give me a second chance. So, yeah, it's one of these things. It's a part of me. I think about it a lot. I think about it in a political way. You know, I'm thankful that we've been safe for the past 7 years, so you know, I tend to be a supporter of what George Bush has done, though I know that's not a very popular view. But it's safe. I'm safe, and my family's safe, and that's pretty important.
The lessons, do you think, that were learned by this country, not only its government, but by its people, after this attack on American soil and these horrendous numbers of casualties and destruction, not only from the World Trade Centers, but the others, on the Pentagon and what happened in Pennsylvania. Have we learned something, do you think? Or have we just accepted it and moved on, hoping that it won't happen again?
I'd say it's more the second. I think the American people have a very short memory. I think for the first, maybe even 5 years, we had a strong memory of it. But just like the earthquake in San Francisco, the day after, I had a cab driver stop at a four-way stop and wave me through. I'd never, ever seen that happen in San Francisco where a cabbie let somebody else go through. Things like that happen. It brings people together. I think September 11th, it brought people together. But I think it fades. And it's up to the 10,000 people that did get out, that were spared that day, to keep it alive.
It made you more conservative politically. What else did it do to change you? You changed the way you think, changed the way you act, changed the way you react to people, family, friends, business acquaintances. You were spared. You're alive.
Yeah, the biggest thing, John, is on September 10th, I was the CEO of a software company working 75 hours a week in San Francisco. And over the next 90 days, I laid off half the company. I bought a house in Tucson. I resigned my position. I sold my house in San Francisco. I got the kids in school here. I hired a new CEO, and I moved. So I was basically made a major life decision every other week for 90 days. And now I'm a developer in Tucson. Some people would say that's a harder job. But I'm a developer in Tucson. I tend to have a more balanced life. I still tend to be a workaholic, but not near what I was. My kids and my wife are definitely much happier. It's different. I'm just in a completely different place than where I was on September 10th.
Any connection with those that were in Morgan Stanley at the office there at all? Any connection with those of you that survived? Did you know, talk to them or ever know of them, of what happened to them?
Yeah, Sandy, who was the SVP of marketing, who I, in essence, credit, was saving my life. I keep in touch with her every year. I will connect with her again tomorrow, or today, I should say. And, she actually worked for another year, and then she took off. She took off for two years. She had a baby. She found herself. She spent some time with her family. And just recently, she went back to work on Wall Street again, part-time. So I keep in touch with her. Like I said, I feel like I owe her my life.
The official New York City observance of the anniversary of 9/11 taking place today, World Trade Center site. Names of the 2,751 victims read aloud for moments of silence will be observed, commemorating the times. Have you been back to that site?
I actually, when I resigned my position, I had to bring the new CEO out there, and so I went back fairly quickly, boarded another United 777, and went back there in October of 01 and walked the site. An interesting story is as I was walking up to the site, the first thing I saw, they had covered, you know, they had surrounded the site with a fence, and the first thing I saw was a bumper sticker, and it said, Tucson is with you. You've probably seen those bumper stickers,
sure.
But I had not seen one before. And so in October of 01, after my wife and I had made the decision to move back home, that's the first thing I saw that I, when I went back. We walked around the whole site, read a lot of the notes. There was a note from a child to his father basically saying, I miss you, and even if you're dead, I hope you're happy. I love you. And, of course, I was a mess for the next 2 hours after that. And since then, I've been back three more times.
Jim, thank you for taking the time to say this. I think if there's any purpose we could serve today, would be to not only hear what you said, to remember the horrible tragedy, and to be angry again. I think anger is an incredibly appropriate response. To be thankful, I'm sure you are, to be alive. We all are thankful to be alive in light of the tremendous death toll, but also to remind each one of us that we must do everything we can as citizens to prevent this from happening again, and to have a sense of every day's precious and valuable. And you and I talked about this one time before, not certainly in any length at all or any depth at all, and there is some depth, some meaning to your life perhaps that wasn't there. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Jim, thank you. I appreciate it very much.
And thank you, John.
Jim Campbell, Oasis Development Company, a well-known builder here in Tucson, was there, 9/11, Tower 2, on that fateful day.
You know, it's amazing that I've been able to be on the air literally ever since we did this original broadcast 7 years after 2001. 2008 was when we started this, and we've done it every year from one station to another. One of the reasons that I got into this business is that I could talk with people as I did talk with Jim Campbell. I could hear their stories, and I could originate those stories, and I could bring those stories to you, a listener. That's all I've ever wanted to do in this business, is talk to people and let you hear what they had to say. Whether you agreed with it or whether you didn't, whether you liked it or whether you didn't, that's all I've ever wanted to do. And I've been very proud to be a part of this for 31 years in this town. I've been a broadcaster here for 50 years, and I love Tucson. I love doing this show. And whether I do it on the weekends or I do it on the weekdays, or I do it 1 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday morning, I don't care. I'm still going to try to do it as well as I possibly can to tell the stories that you need to hear and then let you make up your mind about how you react to those stories. Because we're all about stories. Stories of our life, our politics, our town, our future, our past. They're stories. And I'm so proud to be able to be part of Tucson's broadcast community for all of these years. For all of these years. I want to thank Mike Emery of Perfection Auto Works, who sponsors our show today and will sponsor it on the weekends, each weekend. We have a great relationship. He fixes my car, and I pay him, and I'm happy with that. And, you know, it's pretty simple. A lot of people have car repair experiences that are not that simple. It'll be that simple with Mike Emery if you choose Perfection Auto Works. I want to thank Jim Campbell for allowing this interview to be heard every year, and we've been able to do it every single year since we started it in 2008. It's now 2019, 11 years. I think it is a story that has to be told over and over again about life and about death and about America being attacked and how security of America is so important to all of us. Tucson Map and Flag announces a concierge service. Although the Tucson Map and Flag store that Tucsonans grew up to love and now visit on a regular basis is now closed, Tucson Map and Flag is open during business hours on your phone. You can call Charles Smith, the American flag expert, at 887-4234. Order your American-made flag. Almost any size is available. Travel maps also are available worldwide. And now a concierge service of Tucson Map and Flag, just a phone call away. Call Charles Smith at 887-4234 and place your order. Tucson Map and Flag, sharing your pride in America with the display of America's most cherished symbol. Call 887-4234. Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party, talks politics with us after this break. So glad you could join us on this weekend edition of the John C. Scott Show.
The tow truck is an institution almost as old as the automobile itself. Today, tow trucks are usually flatbeds with a winch to grab your car. We call those the son of a winch. At Perfection Auto Works, our goal is to keep your car running right so that you never have to experience deliverance via a tow truck. Perfection Auto Works, 323-8650 or perfectionautoworks.com.
The John C. Scott Political Forum is made possible with support from former Arizona Supreme Court Justice Stanley Fellman and from former Phoenix Suns owner Don Pitt and from Tucson civic and business leader Humberto Lopez. Save 40% on your dry cleaning bill at Tom Roof Cleaners at Fort Lowland Country Club. Mention John C. Scott on Saturdays and Sundays and you'll save 40% on your dry cleaning bill. Drop off your wash and fold clothes and pay only 90 cents per pound. Tom Roof Cleaners reminds you that every garment is clean with using the patented Green Earth Cleaning System. The Green Earth Cleaning System leaves every garment soft and smooth to the touch without a dry cleaning smell. Mention John C. Scott at Tom Roof Cleaners Saturday and Sunday and save 40% off your dry cleaning bill. Tom Roof Cleaners at Fort Lowland Country Club. If you've been arrested, you deserve the best defense available. You deserve Jeff Rogers. Jeff Rogers has received the highest possible rating as a defense lawyer. Jeff is rated AV preeminent by the leading organization that evaluates lawyers across America. This is a testament that lawyer peers rank Jeff Rogers as the highest level of professional excellence. Choose the lawyer that other lawyers recommend. Choose Jeff Rogers Law Firm. Call 624-4700 or stop by the Jeff Rogers Law Offices at 177 North Church. Arizona Self-Storage and RV Center in Sorita is Southern Arizona's one-stop shop for storage, truck rental, and packing supplies for every storage need. This storage center is a state-of-the-art facility offering air-conditioned and air-cooled storage in all sizes, including enclosed and air-cooled RV, boat, and car storage. Arizona Self-Storage and RV Center in Sorita is Arizona's best storage solution with new covered RV storage and solar panel roofs, located at 18240 South Lackawanna Drive, located and operated locally here in Tucson with over 20 years of experience in the storage industry. Check online at Arizona Self Storage for more information. Go online to ArizonaSelfStorage.com, the very best storage solution in all of Arizona. Concrete Done With Love has been Arizona's leading concrete contractor for over 40 years. Owner Kurt Lutzkum has built Concrete Done With Love to serve Arizona's biggest and smallest concrete jobs. Concrete Done With Love provides the best concrete placing and finishing that is possible, and doing it at a competitive price. The crews at Concrete Done With Love are craftsmen who take great pride in the aspects of their work. For the best concrete jobs in Arizona and the best price, call Kurt Lutzkum at Concrete Done With Love, 639-9928. Concrete Done With Love offices at 1771 West Dairy Place, Tucson.
This portion of the John C. Scott Talk Show originates from the Perfection Auto Works studio. With us now, speaking of Don Jorgen, Don Jorgensen is the former chair of the Democratic Party in Pima County. Joins us now. Welcome, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, how are you, John?
I'm doing well on a fantastic weekend here. Let's talk a little bit about Donald Trump. You don't mind talking about Donald Trump, I don't think. But casting their Trump's nets beyond the special counsel of the Russian report, we got the House Democrats demanding information about the spending of taxpayer money at the president's hotels and properties. We've seen a lot of that. They're seeing violations of the U.S. Constitution that some think could bolster a case for impeachment. There's been multiple efforts that President Trump and the administration officials spent millions of federal dollars on his properties, including Vice President Mike Pence staying a week at the Trump Resort in Ireland, believe it or not. Let's talk about Trump making some money off being president of the United States. Are we ever going to get to the bottom of this, Don Jorgensen?
Well, it's going to take some time, but I think so. I was reflecting that, like probably most Americans, I had never heard of the emoluments clause before Donald Trump became president. And I think we're now all pretty familiar with what that means, and certainly familiar with corruption in politics. And in thinking back, there's no question that this is the most corrupt administration that I have seen in my lifetime. And I've been around for a good dozen presidents. And the difference here, not only is Donald Trump perhaps the most corrupt president and the most corrupt administration, it's also the first time we've seen this level of corruption in plain sight. This administration doesn't even try to hide it with using his hotels. Talking about Ireland, let's start there. With Mike Pence taking on a 180-mile commute for 2 days of meetings in Dublin, immediately creating the ugly American appearance when it comes to Ireland, and just digging a bigger hole when it comes to anti-immigration stance and hypocrisy and everything that goes with that. As you know, he was staying at a Trump property on Ireland's west coast, which cost the taxpayers millions of dollars in flying back and forth on Air Force Two and having now four motorcades to get just between sites and between meetings. Unbelievable. And the Irish didn't take it well. Miriam Lord is a columnist with the Irish Times over there and described Mike Pence, and I'm quoting here, as the untrained lapdog of Trump. And made it really clear that, they're aware of this corruption and they're aware of his hypocrisy. One of the comments that Pence made, without even realizing what he was saying, is talking about how Doonbeg was the home of his grandparents and how his grandfather fled Ireland, emigrated to the United States for reasons of escaping poverty and violence. And now we have folks coming, trying to do the same thing, and you have Mike Pence with one of the most virulent anti-immigration stances of anyone in government. And he doesn't even see the hypocrisy there, certainly not aware of the corruption there, or as we're now finding out, thanks to the Democrats in the House, that the Trump administration has been spending money at his financially troubled site in Scotland by forcing the military flights to stay overnight there. I'm sure he's giving them a discounted rate, but taxpayers, again, are footing the bill to put money into the Trump organization's pockets. You know, I say it's in plain sight. We've been doing that in Mar-a-Lago. We've been doing that at the D.C. hotels. And he's got his own administration in the name of William Barr, who's now going to spend $30,000 to host a party there. So it's one of those actions that we see with dictators, with the kind of leader that Trump wants to be, where they engage in this corruption in plain sight and dare anyone to stand up to them. The question is, will the House Democrats stand up to it or just have investigations? And that's what folks are watching. It is clearly a step toward impeachment. And a lot of folks think that's now clearly overdue as well.
Let me take you to another subject, too, and that is Trump's comments about China. We've got the pain the President Trump says China's feeling in the trade war, which is not what he says it is. Here's a look at the remarks this week by the China economy and how they're stacked up in reality. Trump says China has now had the worst year that it's had in 57 years. It's the worst year they've had in all of this time, and they still want to make a deal, speaking to reporters. That's what he was talking about on Wednesday during the Hurricane Dorian briefing. He says China wants very much to make a deal. We'll see. They've had the worst year in over 50, and said the announcement in the whole question about whether China is going to be able to survive or not, really, not even close, by the way. The facts are, it is true that China's economy is decelerating, and slowed by the Trump taxes on the Chinese imports and Beijing's deliberate campaign to combat runaway debts. The International Monetary Fund expects the Chinese economy to grow 6.2% this year, though not much faster than the U.S., and that's the slowest in a long time for China. But it's fantasy to suggest the Chinese economy is the worst it's had in half a century or more than 57 years. It's just simply not true. Once again, a statement at an international level that affects literally world trade, world money, is just plain off, just apparently a lie, or just ignorance, or both. Amazing.
Well, and it's clearly both, and at this point, it is also insulting the intelligence of the American voters and of Trump voters. And there I'm referring to the farmers across the country. And folks, you know, talk about the farmers in the Midwest. Well, there's farmers all across this country. I had the experience of driving down through California coming back to Tucson. And as you know, that Central California is covered with farms. And from there to the Midwest, they're being hurt by Trump's trade war and Trump's tariffs. And the president can lay out all the rhetoric he wants and talk about China's economy, which if you know anything about China, and I know you do, they're not going to be hurt by even a two-year trade war. And they're targeting Trump's base by going after the farmers in the Midwest who are now being hurt. They were hurt a little bit by Trump's rejection of NAFTA and fooling around with that and wasting a year before he came up with the brilliant idea of NAFTA Part 2. So all he did was lose money for American organizations and manufacturers and farmers during that time. And he's doing it again at an even greater level now with the additional tariffs that started September 1st, which are not only hurting farmers in the Midwest and around the country, but now hurting consumers directly as prices will start to go up. So all this talk on China is attempt to distract from those facts, that the base is starting to get restless. Folks that voted for Donald Trump realize that this whole trade war is not easy to win, as he said. It is causing a real problem and will, as economists have pointed out, begin to affect perhaps the economy next year, and certainly could affect his approval ratings and one of many factors, obviously, that could affect re-election. But the fact is, the trade war is hurting the U.S. far more than it's hurting China, and that's going to continue because clearly Donald Trump has no plan in sight. There is talk that some high-level meetings will take place regarding this, but at this point, the U.S. would be, I think, lucky to get back to where it was before Trump engaged in this tariff war, let alone see any benefit from it, because there's already been harm. So there's going to have to be a lot of work just to get back to even, and I haven't seen any economist reports indicate that that's likely.
By the way, the head of the Arizona Republican Party, Don Jorgensen, faced a backlash just this last weekend after sending a fundraising email that said Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Mark Kelly, who rose to prominence when his wife was shot in the head, will be stopped, quote, dead in his tracks. Poor choice of words, but from Arizona Republican former U.S. Senate candidate Kelly Ward and chair of the Republican Party in Arizona, not surprising. Let me take a quick break and think about that and tell me what you think of Kelly Ward back in the forefront of putting her, I don't know, foot in her mouth, but we'll talk about that in a moment. We'll be back with Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party in Pima County. This portion of the John C. Scott Show originates from the Perfection Auto Works Studios. Back in a moment. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum. Don Jorgensen is my guest, former chair of the Democratic Party. Kelly Ward said, we're going to stop Mark Kelly dead in his tracks. Poor choice of words. She's doing that all the time. And people, I guess, just have to go along with it. What do you think, Don Jorgensen?
When I first heard that, I heard it was from the, I forgot who the leader of the Arizona Republican Party was. And then when I saw Kelly, it did not come as a surprise.
Right.
This is Chemtrail Kelly, who has just stuck her foot in her mouth time and time again. But beyond that, I also look for the response from Republican Party members. And I found two things. First, I found crickets. No comment, of course, from Martha McSally, which has come to pretty much be her standard response, is to stay quiet or ask Mitch McConnell for guidance. And then the only other comment I saw was from Paul Gosar, the representative who defended this disgusting comment. And I guess completely forgot that when Steve Scalise, the representative from Louisiana, was shot 2 years ago, you recall that at the softball game, Gosar attacked the rhetoric that came from the other side. The sick gentleman who shot up there said he was there to terminate the Republican Party. Paul Gosar attacked that kind of language when it came from the other side, but when it comes from his own party, he's also silent. So you really have to wonder about the level of leadership, to call it that, in Arizona among Republicans. It really was a disgusting statement on its own right, let alone the fact that, as you know, Mark Kelly is married to Gabrielle Giffords, and they've all gone through that, both responsible gun owners. So you can't have a better example of a person in Mark Kelly who is seeking responsible gun rights reform and being attacked in just not only a nonsensical way, but a mean-spirited and potentially damaging way, troubling way, because that's exactly the kind of language that incites folks who are, you know, not always stable, or giving them permission to speak out in equally disgusting ways. You know, and it brought back in my head, as it might have to you, what Sarah Palin did to Gabby Giffords during Giffords' last campaign, when she put a target, a literal gun target, on the picture of Gabby Giffords' office. And, you know, a lot of us recall how disgusting that was. And Kelly Ward's comments brought back echoes of that. And it's equally disgusting. And as disturbing is the fact that no Republicans have come out and called her on it, and certainly Martha McSally has not. I think clearly it's backfiring on her, and it will actually give another boost to Mark Kelly's campaign. And it really lays out the contrast between what the Democratic Party candidates have to offer and what the Republican Party has to offer. Really a disgusting display on the part of Kelly Ward, and I think speaks well again to how Mark Kelly is handling this campaign for Senate.
Talking with Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party. A headline, of course, in a recent newspaper, the Arizona Daily Star, talking about the Pentagon approving shifting $3.6 billion from the military to build the border wall of Donald Trump. There's not one person that has any sense whatsoever that would suggest the border wall is needed, that it's going to make a damn bit of difference on how many people cross illegally into this country. They're taking money from all kinds of sources. I noticed that Mitch McConnell is saying, well, they're not going to take any money from my Kentucky interest. He's going to try to stop that. Of course, not all of us are president of the Senate, and we can't protect the particular money one way or another if Donald Trump wants to take it. The border wall has been part of the mantra of Donald Trump from the very beginning. It still is, and it's just as stupid today as it was when he first mentioned it, and maybe more so.
Guess who voted to divert all those funds from the Pentagon to this border wall?
Go ahead.
Martha McSally.
Yeah, there she did. Nice going, Martha.
She voted for it, and because she was assured, she says, that they wouldn't take money from Arizona. She said she got that from the Pentagon directly. And, of course, as you pointed out, $30 million has been diverted from construction projects in Sierra Vista to this ridiculous border wall plan of the president's, just so that he can demonstrate that he might be able to keep half of a promise, because certainly he hasn't built any an inch of new wall, nor has Mexico paid for any of that wall. But even more disturbing is, again, what's happening in Congress. And I hope folks understand that these are funds that Congress, the House of Representatives and the Senate, approved for Pentagon funding. It was part of the budget approval. And those go through a lot of review and determining the projects that deserve approval and the amount of the budget for the Pentagon. Those funds were approved. And the president comes along and just takes those and puts them into his own vanity project. The response of the Trump administration and the Senate was to say with a straight face, well, for those projects to be approved, all Congress has to do is go back in and authorize the funds, and those projects will be approved. Well, they did that. And again, the Trump administration diverted that money. So who's to say that they won't divert the money again or take from other projects? This is an administration that has no respect for the system that we have in place, for the checks and balances of government. We know certainly has no respect for the rule of law, but in this case, no respect for the role of Congress, and he's aided by one of the leaders of Congress, and that's the leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, who is allowing this to happen. And American people, again, need to understand what's happening here. You have a president who's essentially taken over Congress and bending it to his own whims and vanity projects, and again, affecting, we believe, the safety and security of this nation and the readiness of our military. Those are serious actions.
Yeah, and take a look at the terrible tragedy of the hurricane devastation in the Bahamas and now along our East Coast. It seems to me, and of course, a lot of the funding from Puerto Rico was taken now for this wall. Tell me how you can do that with a straight face or with any kind of sense of humanity and what is important and what is not. But it looks like that those funds that were still obviously designated for hurricane relief of the last one will not even obviously be available for hurricane relief from this one. And there's going to be the need, certainly in the Bahamas, for millions and millions and million dollars of restoration funding. I don't know where that's going to come from, but I think we all have an interest in rebuilding the Bahamas, and it is terrific that the damage from these hurricanes of just the last 72 hours is beyond imagination. I've never seen a video like this. It looks like an atomic bomb. Nagasaki is really what is left of many of these locations struck by this terrible hurricane. And who's going to help? And where's the money going to come from? Are we going to have him throwing paper towels at people again? Is that what we need? Donald and the wife on a little trip to the Bahamas and picking up some paper towels to toss around? I don't know. God knows.
It's an interesting juxtaposition, since the Bahamas is its own commonwealth, its own nation, in a sense, not part of the United States. It's wonderful that the U.S. is offering help. We've already, as we've seen, sent the Coast Guard over there. Again, one of those branches of the military from which Trump had previously diverted funds, as he also did from FEMA. And again, we have had damage occur in the U.S. up along the Carolina borders, and there may be additional happening where FEMA has and will need to respond. Well, they have the money now to do that, but what happens with the next disaster? Because, again, they have not had the ability to continue to develop their resources because of the diversion of funds. The Coast Guard's another example. They're using aging ships, and their readiness has been affected or negatively impacted because of the diversion of funds. So everywhere you look, the safety and security of this nation, as well as the economic stability of this nation, has been affected by Trump's focus on either building the wall or demonstrating again and again that he is some kind of great negotiator, although there's no evidence for either of those things happening. Fortunately, when we look at what's happening in the Bahamas, we have a number of global aid organizations that are already there on the ground helping out. And it is really a worldwide response effort. When you look at the Red Cross coming in, you look at Habitat coming in, you look at groups like Shelterbox, which provides temporary shelter and other aid to families there. All of those organizations are on the ground already, and there are a number of different countries that have pledged financial support. So I think we'll see an incredible turnaround there, but the devastation that has occurred to 70,000 families who are without homes is just on a level that we haven't seen before as a result of natural disasters.
Well, we can't fix it with a Sharpie. We just can't. We can't draw thing around it. You know, I used to, one of my children, I won't tell you which one, used to just love to get a Sharpie and write on the wall. And I would approach that person, I won't say male or female, and to say, no, don't write on the wall. Oh, I didn't. And they had the Sharpie in their hand. You know, it's in their hand. You know, well, if you didn't do it, who did it? And she'd be looking for the dog. I guess I said she. Looking for the dog, looking for the cat, looking for anybody to say, this is not my Sharpie. This belongs to Marley, the dog. You know, I mean, whatever. You know, it just seems to me that the, Trump had that look on his face about, I didn't do that. I know.
We've been concerned. Many of us have been concerned about the fact that, you know, we want to keep them away from the nuclear codes and that button. Well, apparently now we have to keep them away from the magic marker.
Put the damn Sharpie, you know, for God's sake. No, don't let them have the Sharpie. Or the codes, or the Twitter, or God knows what else. Don Jorgensen, thanks for being with us. Have a great weekend. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with me. I really, really do. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, John.
Always good talking with you. Former chair of the Democratic Party, Don Jorgensen, a regular to the John C. Scott Show. Well, we want to thank you for listening. We want to thank, of course, Raul Grijalva. We played his tape again from last Friday about whether he did or did not orchestrate the millions of dollars that flowed into the Regina Romero campaign and the Democratic nomination for mayor. Did he do it? Well, sure he did. Of course he did. I mean, come on, who else is going to do that? Who else had a motive? Motive means opportunity. He had the motive. He had the means. He had the opportunity. Guilty. Guilty. Well, if you want to keep turning left, you elect Regina Romero as mayor, and we'll just keep turning left like a stock car race. Believe me, that's not going to be good for us. Take a look very closely, please, at Ed Ackerley as the independent candidate for mayor. Great, great candidate. I want to thank you for being with us. I want to thank Perfection Auto Works for sharing their studios with us. This portion of the John C. Scott Show originates from the Perfection Auto Works studios. Have a great weekend. We'll be back 2 to 4 next Saturday. Have a great weekend, everyone.